Hey, hey, all you Arizona lovers. This is the Finding Arizona podcast, episode number 359. We are actually sitting down with one of the co-founders of PETA Jungle, and I'm very excited to say that this was an episode that we got to do live on location. On top of that, we have a couple of B-rolls that will be able to show you what their food looks like and also what they've been able to accomplish the last couple of years. It's really incredible to see something as beautiful as three friends or a couple of friends coming together and finding something that they're passionate about and really want to give back to the community. And this is one of those stories. So PETA Jungle, episode number 359. But before we get into it, we are going to tell you a little bit about ourselves. You can hear every episode of our podcast at findingarizonapodcast.com. We make it easy for you guys to connect with us. So everything under social media is Finding Arizona Podcast. If you'd like to send us an email, that's findingarizonapodcast@gmail.com. All in all, please sign up for our newsletter, which tells you a little bit more of the official side. The blog is a little bit more of the personal side on the website. And if you'd like to dive even deeper, we do have a vlog, which is a video dialogue blog of our actual lives. That's located over on our YouTube page, along with every episode that is done now from I think 2350 and beyond. But thank you so much for being a part of this. Thank you so much for allowing us to come into your ears and let you know what's going on in your community. All in all, we will see you on the next episode. Episode number 359 with PETA Jungle starts now. See you next time. Welcome back, everybody, to the Finding Arizona podcast. I'm your host, Jose. As always, we have fantastic guests, and we are sitting in the headquarters of PETA Jungle. We have, I want to just let you introduce yourself and tell us your position here at PETA Jungle.
Oh, yeah. My name is Basil Osmani, and I'm one of the three co-founders of PETA Jungle.
Nice. So, Basil, right? I'm going to just ruin it just from the beginning.
No, not at all. Basil.
Yeah. one of the three co-founders.
Yes.
And as such, I just want to first off say thank you for your time and just allowing us to have this conversation with you, because this is a wonderful operation here. And it's really fantastic to for someone who actually goes to PETA Jungle and like has a love for what you guys provide. Is this one of the other co-founders right here?
Yeah, that's one of them.
Hey, that's how's it going? Thank you. How are you? I hope you're doing well today.
Yes, indeed.
What an experience that I'm getting to interview Basil here, but I'm also just wanted to say thank you for what you guys provide to the community. And, you know, this whole operation is just fantastic, and I'm a customer that loves to come back for sure.
I appreciate that very much.
Thank you. So Basil, I would just like to just ask this question, because I always ask this of everyone who comes through, I guess. Can you give us a little bit of your origin story on how you came to be one of the co-founders?
Yes, I was an ASU student, mm-hmm. along with my two partners. We were roommates and friends back since the mid-80s.
Okay.
We went through several years. We did our graduate work here too, mm-hmm. of eating the diet.
Yeah, just going through the motions of eating everything.
The college student diet, and you know, and after so many chicken wings and mm-hmm. fried things, and you know, we all came from culinary backgrounds, like strong family traditions where people cook at home.
Yeah.
Inevitably, we started cooking in our apartment and then homes, you know. And at some point, the notion of doing something that's healthy and that breaks that monotony in fast food that most students are subjected to, you know.
Absolutely.
So that's how the idea germinated, that there's got to be more people that are interested in something better for them. To confirm all that, back then, back in the early 90s, there was already like a grassroots level interest in healthier diets. You know, there used to be the Gentle Strength mm-hmm. Co-op in Tempe, which was a grocery store with a kitchen and a restaurant. And they did, you know, vegetarian.
Yeah.
Like
style
items based on soy and tofu. I mean, truly vegan and vegan. And surprisingly enough, back then, there was like a lot of interest, not only for those staunch followers of this diet, mm-hmm. but from mainstream Americans, you know, yeah. soccer moms, what have you, yeah. coming out there and trying to select for healthier options, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that totally confirmed our hunch that there might be something there. So
awesome.
So and we stepped in with the idea of using a global menu filtered through the Mediterranean diet.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Olive oil, legumes, nuts, grains, veggies.
Nice.
But if you look at our menu, even today, you know, you'll see influences from local here, Sonoran, mm-hmm. Asian, of course, Mediterranean.
Yeah.
But everything we do, we use premium ingredients with the ubiquitous use of olive oil mm-hmm. and high quality proteins, nuts, grains, blah, blah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So even back in the 80s, and you were just, you know, the early onset thinking of like, let's choose a different path and let's go a different route and just get away from the fried food and stick to things that we grew up on. You brought that up, your childhood and just kind of your family background. I'd love to, you know, kind of get a little bit more of like, what was cooking like for you and your family when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. So I grew up mostly in Lebanon.
Okay.
I was born in France, but yeah. because my dad went to college there. But yeah. we moved when I was a young kid and I did elementary schooling in Lebanon.
Yeah.
Strong family tradition, especially on my mom's side, the cooking was on the forefront of everything. Everything was a food critic, from the little babies to the grandparents.
Yes.
Every Sunday, we all went to my grandparents, and they would put out this massive spread of things. My grandpa would go and shop for specific things that are hyper-local and seasonal, and he would go and cook them up. And so everyone had a sense of what's good, what's fresh, you know,
nice.
and people appreciated good things. You gotta try this. No, I'm full. No,
you
gotta,
you know. you haven't tasted anything like this yet.
So that's kind of like, you know, where it all started for me, you know, as far as culinary, you know, it's just that joy of
like getting together. And so I'll give you a little bit of background on me. Is my father grew up in Puerto Rico, and then my mom grew up on the Indian reservation up north. And so my culinary background has always been kind of similar, where it's, you know, my dad would cook his style of cooking, and my mom also had her style of cooking. What happens is when we come together as a family, those mixtures, those blends really come full forward, because my father was very apt to being the one that cooks for dinner time and taking on that challenge.
Yeah.
So when he introduced my mother's side of the family, where this Native American kind of like, where they would do pinto beans and a lot of more, you know, soup based meals, he would bring in rice, chicken, and all this new kind of culinary. And I always thought that was beautiful, because, I mean, what we all share similar a lot of the times are just food, and we come together and we have conversations around food. So, you know, my youth was in the conversation, sitting down with my grandparents, who they would take their time eating everything. They their joy, their love is being at a big table with the family and having a meal and just having a long conversation.
And that was before cell phones and games and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So even the kids were engaged.
Exactly.
You know, they
had
no other option, or you died of boredom.
Yeah. So I, you know, that's a lot of the times where my youth kind of picks up a big part of like where I do this today, is that conversation bit, where that's where my love and joy comes from. It's just that feeling of connection brings me back to childhood. And it's something that excites me every day that I get to do this. And so I'd love to get to know what you guys had gone through, because this is something that has affected everyone the past couple of years through the pandemic, what you had to pivot to and help yourselves stay afloat.
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic was rough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Overnight.
Yeah.
Business dwindles. No dine-in. Mm-hmm. Commerce.
Yeah.
Business. Luckily, even before the pandemic, we had a strong to-go and pick-up following.
Yes.
And we were early on to testing out things with, you know, the third-party delivery companies.
Okay.
So we already had foundation with them. So yeah. So when all this happened and the first lockdown came, the lockdown came through, we were able to flip the switch. We were not able to recoup
the dine-in,
the whole thing.
Yeah.
But there was enough to kind of trickle through to keep us afloat.
Yes.
You know, and in that sense, we were super lucky because we had that stream pre-existing to the pandemic. And we got lucky that we actually already had our accounts set up with the third parties, because at that point, everyone wanted to do that. And there was not enough, you know, workers to do that for them, you know, with Uber Eats and DoorDash and those guys.
Do you think that what Pita Jungle pivot to, where, you know, your business, do you guys think that certain aspects of that pandemic helped you, like, you know, with maybe safety or any other things that, like, really helped you, I don't know, just retain certain aspects? Like, do you guys still keep doing certain routines or something that you've kept from the pandemic?
I mean, the routines as far as running a restaurant are the same, you know. Mm-hmm. We have the health department and the county here.
Yeah.
And it's one of the actually better systems of health and pathogen control probably in the nation. Yeah. Like it's Maricopa County, that is. It's really impressive, the various programs that they have.
Oh, okay.
So we had that. Now, with the pandemic came the notion of hyper sanitizing everything.
Yes.
Obviously, washing hands was a known thing even before the pandemic. I mean, you don't step in a restaurant as an employee, as a worker, and not wash your hand on every corner at every sink. You cannot. Did we pick up any more stringent? No, we've always conducted ourselves within the norms of
It's beautiful that it wasn't a hard exchange or a hard change for any of your employees or any management or anything like that. That's wonderful to hear, because in a sense, you've already had the...
Well, it was harder because you had to sanitize everything. And if someone was reported to have been exposed or infected, then early on, I mean, we used to hire a company to come in and fumigate the whole place. Yes, we've done that a few times.
Wow.
One of our employees came down with it.
Wow, that's great.
But then, you know, it was unknown back then what
it was capable of. Yeah.
And then, you know, the standard became, well, you sanitize everything, you roll out the paper towels and the sanitizer and you do the whole thing.
Absolutely.
That's
so incredible. Again,
bag, is there something about your bag or your packaging?
Yeah, packaging.
Oh yeah, of course, the packaging. And that's especially for the third party deliveries.
Okay.
When a third party comes and pick up a bag of food, someone you don't know picks it up from you and delivers it to a patron, to a customer.
Okay.
So yeah, our packaging is tamper proof, right? It has a sticky strip from the inside and you peel it. And once your order is within the bag, you seal it and that's it. It's tamper proof. It gets there.
Do you find, was there an out call of like thank yous to for adding that in? Because for me, that's a unique experience to have a sealed to-go package like that.
Of course. I mean, nowadays the outcall comes through digital reviews. Or social media. And of course, we've had some appreciation there.
That's
some
awesome.
Love.
That's really awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, I would love to, again, go back to your, like, the Mediterranean roots and just kind of understand a little bit more of, like, where some of the culinary aspects are. Like, are you guys pushing a little bit more? Like, what are some of the things, like the olive oil, is it come from a certain area? You know, things like that.
Well, the olive oil, obviously it's seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
And we, like, currently our olive oil is Italian.
Yeah.
And it's function of what's available, what's abundant, what's good, mm-hmm. what meets our standards, culinary standards. But other alternative would be Spanish or Greek.
Yeah,
or,
okay.
I wish I could get Lebanese, you know, or Levant olives, because I grew up with these, but they don't have the industry, you know. It's consumed locally. There's not enough of it. So there's so many good things in this world that never leave their local markets because they're not streamlined.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's a good thing.
Because it keeps it kind of local to the community and allows them to enjoy it just as much.
Plus, they're putting buildings everywhere and taking down the trees. So that they, even if they wanted, they couldn't do it, unfortunately.
So let me ask you about, you know, as your position here as founder, co-founder, what are some of the daily routines in your schedule to kind of keep this ship afloat and running?
Well, we have a very talented team that helps us operate everything, you know, from store to store operations to the accounting to the marketing to the human resources to everything. But the founders, my partner, you just met him, and I mean, we pretty much wear all kind of hats.
Yeah,
we're involved in everything from menu development and specials to marketing slogans to vetting, you know, situations, what to do, this and that. I mean, never a dull moment here.
Never ever a dull moment. Yeah. As you guys have started to kind of, from my understanding, are you guys expanding a little bit more, or do you guys feel like you're expanding at the right level of today's market?
Well, right now, I mean, we have a very strong presence, I feel, especially in Maricopa County, but in Arizona, I mean, you know, we have a store in Flag, Steph, one in Tucson, and the rest of them all here, totaling some 24 locations.
Yep.
Out of state, maybe sometime, you know, but what we really want to do is, open something a little different within the healthy restaurant world, but more casual, smaller footprint.
Got it.
And go in that direction.
Nice. Now, as you look towards that goal, do you see this is just me pulling at the string here. Do you see a certain state or something, you know, location-wise that draws your eye?
Location-wise, I mean, it makes sense from logistics to go where your vendors have a reach and where you suspect the market conditions will be similar, right? So the Southwest broadly would be our low hanging fruit, right? Yeah. We're definitely gonna go to Colorado and Texas and before we end up in Virginia or Maryland,
the other side of the United States. Yeah. If I could make a suggestion, just because my wife is from there, is San Diego, California, and just she grew up on the south end near the border. And so I've always kind of been an advocate for that because she grew up in a small beach town.
Chula Vista.
Chula Vista High School.
Yeah.
Imperial Beach.
Imperial Beach, yeah, I love it there. Yeah, it's cool.
And so I always say, like, when she first took me over there, that was like, I had a vision of like what a beach town is in my head. And her, where she grew up, is just that. Like, it's my vision of like, wow, this is an actual beach town. It's so beautiful. And so if I could make any suggestion, it would be Imperial Beach.
Okay, keep that in mind.
Now that we're talking about like these goals, for Pita Jungle in general, I imagine that there is a level of goals that you guys keep, you know, in your head or just in the books for someone who's interested in wanting to know. Is there a goal like for, you know, sales or anything like that, that maybe our you know, listeners would love to help you with, or if there's a goal that you guys have set for every year or something that you have set for this year, let us know. I would love to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the goals, that we would like to reach this year is to kind of like redefine our dine-in experience.
Okay.
Because, the numbers are good. Mm-hmm. They're the same, you know, adjusted to inflation. Fine. It's all good. We're growing. But we have large restaurants and a lot of our food nowadays is leaving to go bags, especially in business areas where office buildings, you know, and, you know, it's a national situation nowadays with those offices half empty, half full.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do a lot of to go. So in order to bring back the dine-in, we feel you have to
bring a uniqueness.
Yeah.
That's
create an experience.
Yeah, exactly.
So whether it's going to be music venues, mm-hmm. pop-ins, whatever it is, you know, that's where we're at. Though.
That's awesome.
And that's the goal because, and this is what hinged us to kind of like dabble with fast casual because our stores are very successful, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
But they're less efficient. But not financially less efficient because we're sitting on real estate that we're not using.
Yeah.
If I have a dining room that's not turning around at full capacity, then why do I need to have that real estate?
Exactly.
You know,
I get it
from that perspective.
So the one I'll just let you know, the one that we go to predominantly is that one downtown, which is on Third Street or was
Third
it?
Ave.
Third Ave.
Third Ave. Third,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's our piece of jungle that we like to visit and frequent. So I understand where you're coming from that level of like, if the space isn't being utilized, you know, you want to have that space somehow being taken up and being used. And one of the things that I always found beautiful was you guys doing live music and it was enjoyable to, because in that space it works really well because it's so dynamic and unique.
Yeah.
And so
thank you. Yeah, we're trying our best. I mean, this specific location downtown pre-COVID, you know, it used to have a vibrant lunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
When all the office buildings were populated.
Yeah.
I mean, it was standing room only.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, it's good business and a lot of to-go bags. You go in there like busy doing caterings, doing those kind of things.
Yeah.
And you know.
So as you guys start to dabble in that, what is kind of the most exciting part for you as the owner making these new attempts? And like, what's exciting you personally?
It excites me when I can rile up emotion and excitement with our, you know, customer base.
Yeah, exactly.
Our people, our, you know, our patrons.
Yeah. I love that you have still this joy of wanting to get people in through the doors, but give them the experience that they want and have that love of that culinary experience.
Well, talking about goals and challenges, I mean, one of the biggest goals when you go from one store to multi.
Yeah.
Is to transcend that connection. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you have one store, you're there, you know, every single person that gets in, gets out.
Yeah.
And our business is mostly regular, so you become a friend with pretty much everyone that's in there.
Nice.
Okay, so now you have multiple locations. What do you do? And how do you spread that DNA, make sure that, you know, we're still on to the culture of the brand?
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, an everlasting goal / challenge.
Yeah.
that, you know, we're always trying to solve for that.
Exactly. It's the Rubik's Cube of owning a business.
Yeah.
It's just like, keep going.
Yeah.
And you're trying to figure it out. I do want to just say that you guys have been so kind to us to allow us to just share your story. I would love to understand one more bit and just get a little bit more personal with you. Your favorite bit of the menu, what's your personal fave in the menu?
I mean, you should see the way I eat at my menu. It's all deconstructed. And this is pretty much the same way our guests treat our menu. I mean, you have the menus and then you have, give me the hummus, add to it charred broccoli.
Okay.
Give me a drizzle of olive oil.
Yep.
So it's all a la carte, you know, after 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't go straight to items.
you kind of create.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I have to say that, you know, our hummus is, you know, just with simple olive oil and toasted chips or veggies, it's like
the best.
My go-to.
Yeah. I love that. I love that how
simple things.
Yeah. So thank you again for allowing us to just, again, understand your aspect of owning and co-owning this. In the end, we kind of leave it to you to let everyone know that last goal or something that you want to share with everyone. This is just for you to share, like if it's like a maybe some advice for someone who's starting out a business or just something for your own business to share to the world. Go ahead.
Well, two things I want to share. The first one is my appreciation and thanks for us being around for 30 years almost.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at loss of words when it comes to that. This is not easy business, the restaurant business, and but for us, it's been a pleasure and it's been fun for us, and it makes us super happy whenever someone gives us a compliment about anything that pertains to the experience we put out there. And as far as advice, I would say to any aspiring culinary who wants to dabble in this world, you just stick to it, you know. There's when we opened our second restaurant, it siphoned away all the proceeds from our first one. Mm-hmm. One day we came in and there was a lock on our door.
Oh, no.
The accountant type and lawyers and all that were telling us, well, you shut it down. You cut down your losses. You have a good store over there. Why are you doing this to yourself? That was on Dobson and Ray before the 101, before the Fashion Center Mall opened.
Yeah.
The reason why we got that location is we did bank on these things happening and for the whole area to, you know,
rise up.
And we stuck to our guns. We suffered. and today it's one of the most successful, vibrant stores in our system. So, wow. I mean, sometimes if you can't stick it through white waters, rough times, mm-hmm. try to stay afloat.
Nice.
Good things may happen. But then again, what do I know? You know, I don't.
No, it was really good because it does show us again. It's like if you do stick it out, there will be easier times.
Yeah.
And you just have to believe in yourself to know that what you made was based on, you know, facts or just, you know, understanding the market. And you chose to take a chance and take a leap of faith. And it panned out. Like, I really do respect it. And I think it's a wonderful piece of advice.
And of course, the savants and whatever, they'll tell you, well, there's an opportunity cost. The time you wasted here, you could have done this or that. So I don't even want to go there.
Yeah,
but to me, that's, I feel like, you know, you're in, and you see what you can do.
Well, again, I really appreciate you allowing us to understand what you guys bring to the table and just understand you a little bit more, because it does mean a lot for me as someone who's a customer to hear it from the horse's mouth and hear it from you, the owner. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your team. And I hope to be back at Pita Jungle with my order pretty soon. And before we go, we do have a chance for you to let everyone know, how can someone, or if they... You already said how many stores there are, but if they wanted to find you on social media, do you have a social media? This is our little pitch to everyone that has social media.
Yes, we're present. First of all, our website, pitajungle.com.
Exactly.
And we're on Instagram, Facebook.
Yes.
Twitter. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All under Pita Jungle.
Pita Jungle.
Awesome. And ladies and gentlemen, you can hear every episode of our podcast at findingarizonapodcast.com. We make it easy for you guys to connect with us on social media. That's Finding Arizona under Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Last but not least, we always say kisses, hugs, and belly rubs to our four-legged friends, because we usually record in a studio with dogs and cats, but they're not here right now. But we will see you on the next episode. Thank you again
for being here.